It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. People gathered for a vigil in Charleston last night to remember people murdered in New Zealand.
It's not a thing of the past. It's not in the margins and the fringes of society anymore. It is being broadcast, it is being posted, it is being shared, it has been streamed and used to energize a very twisted base.
We'll have that story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia's Attorney General is suing the state's Catholic Church. Glennis Board of WVPB reports the lawsuit filed yesterday claims the church knowingly employed pedophiles in schools and camps without informing parents.
West Virginia's Attorney General Patrick Morrissey says the state is stepping in because the church has failed to disclose important information to families paying for educational services.
We allege that the Diocese of Wheeling-Charleston persisted in covering up and keeping secret the criminal behavior of priests relating to sexual abuse of children.
Morrissey's office identifies specific priests and employees, some with convictions, and their assignments in schools and camps in West Virginia. In a statement, the diocese challenges the state's assertions and says that it has, quote, a zero-tolerance policy for any cleric, employee, or volunteer credibly accused of abuse. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glennis Board in Wheeling, West Virginia.
Inaction by Congress and the Trump administration is threatening a fund that supports coal miners suffering from black lung disease. The Associated Press has learned that lawmakers let an automatic tax rate cut on coal tax take effect in January. Federal budget officials say that cut the flow of money so sharply into the fund that it might not have enough to cover the cost of doctor visits and medicines for about 25,000 retired coal miners starting next year. The cuts to the fund could save coal operators hundreds of millions of dollars a year. President Donald Trump vowed to save the coal industry during the 2016 campaign and has repeatedly praised miners. The shrinking of the fund comes amid a surge in black lung disease among Appalachian coal miners. West Virginia receives the fourth most federal funding of any state in the country, according to a new analysis. Liz McCormick explains.
The financial news website 24/7 Wall Street announced in a press release that West Virginia netted more than $7,000 per resident from the federal government in fiscal year 2017. In total, West Virginia saw nearly $25 billion. The report says, however, that states receiving the most federal funding on a per capita basis tend to have relatively large populations of low-income residents who depend on federal assistance programs such as SNAP and Medicaid. On the flip side, states that give more to the federal government than they receive tend to have residents with higher incomes. Exceptions to this include Maryland and Virginia, which are states that receive high federal funding due to their large defense contracting sectors. Virginia receives the most federal funding in the country, while Connecticut receives the least. Money from the federal government is redistributed to states in the form of grants, aid programs for the needy, and payments to major government contracting firms, such as defense companies. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick.
About 300 people gathered inside the Islamic Association of West Virginia last night to hold a vigil in memory of the 50 people who were killed in New Zealand last Friday. Religious leaders from several different faiths were among those who spoke inside the South Charleston Mosque. Roxy Todd reports.
There were 9 people who took the podium to speak about how the New Zealand massacre affects the people of West Virginia. Some of the speeches were somber, like that of Joseph Cohen of the American Civil Liberties Union.
I'm tired of vigils. I'm tired of senseless violence. I'm tired over the confusion of what we have become and how we have gotten here.
Others, including Victor Yurecki, the rabbi at Baha'i Jacob Synagogue, voiced anger and frustration at the violence that continues to spread from white supremacy.
It's not a thing of the past. It's not in the margins and the fringes of society anymore. It is being broadcast, it is being posted, it is being shared, it has been streamed, it's being tweeted, and used to energize a very twisted base.
But Yarecki closed with a message of love for those of Muslim faith.
But my friends, I'm also glad we are here and in such incredible numbers. Because as much as we don't want to be here, it is important for our dear Muslim brothers and sisters to see this.
Like Yarecki, several of his speakers were religious leaders of Christian or Jewish faith who have friends within the Muslim community. After the speeches, several hundred people gathered together to talk, laugh, and be together over refreshments.
Well, we are very appreciative of the community support, and it is very reassuring to see such a large number of non-Muslims here who are here to show their support and the condemnation of what happened in New Zealand.
This is Nazia Ahmed, who worships here. She says she is still grappling with many emotions over the killing in New Zealand last Friday, which killed dozens of people as they were praying inside two mosques.
It was, in the house of our worship. It was Muslims, it was humans, and it was done in hatred. So we are all affected by it. We are, all upset with it, and we are appreciative of all the support here.
Many of the people at Tuesday's vigil said this was their first time entering a mosque. Some of them said they would like to return to continue to keep better lines of communication between people of different faiths.
Thank you for coming.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Charleston.
God bless you for coming.
And you as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:50. Becoming partly sunny today with highs in the 50s and 60s. Mostly cloudy tonight with a slight chance of rain, lows in the 30s. Rain likely tomorrow with highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the Clay Center in Charleston, presenting an evening with David Crosby and Friends, Thursday, May 30th at 7:30. Tickets and information at theclaycenter.org. In movies, the people and places of Appalachia are often made into an other. That makes it easy to both romanticize and look down upon the region. Think of the universal jokes about the film Deliverance, for example. In Meredith McCarroll's book Unwhite, Appalachia, Race, and Film, she examines the way the people of Appalachia are portrayed using stereotypes. Eric Douglas spoke to her to find out more.
Tell me, what prompted you to write this book?
I had the amazing chance, experience of running into almost literally a reading of the Appalachian poets at University of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And at that reading, I finally realized, oh, I don't have to think about race and region completely differently. At the same time, I was thinking about movies. I was thinking about the ways that movies represent places and was frustrated by the limited perception of Appalachia based on a handful of movies. So I thought, well, here's what I'll do. I'll go and I will blow up this idea that Appalachia is this monolithic, white, impoverished place, and where all the same stories are told about this place as if it is this stagnant region. Fast forward, I watched a lot of movies. I was really building on Jerry Williamson's work that he's done about representations of Appalachia, and I, instead of seeing this wild diversity of representation of Appalachia, saw the same stories over and over that turned into these patterns of representation that allowed me to loop back in to thinking about representation of non-white people and I started to make some comparisons there. Then I had kind of got myself in an interesting situation where I wanted to be really clear that I do not believe the Appalachian people have been discriminated against in all the same ways as racial minorities in America, but the function of the lazy stereotypes is similar.
So the white people outside of Appalachia are saying, well, we're still better than everybody. Just ignore those people from Appalachia. They're not quite the same as we are.
Yeah, and I think that that happens with representations of rural people, representations of poverty that sometimes intersects with whiteness as well. A lot of times, though, I think that those images of rural poverty get placed in the mountains, in the mountain south, and then something interesting happens where people begin to see the mountain south, or even just all of Appalachia, as one place that doesn't have diversity in terms of, you know, all of the ways that you can have diversity: class, race, politics, ways of thinking, religion.
Why do you think that Appalachia is portrayed that way? Is it just convenience? People
want. Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that these stereotypes land on Appalachia has a deep history that has to do with, in some ways, it has to do with landscape. I think that people who settled in the mountains were able to, many of them were more isolated. And that isolation was met sometimes with curiosity and sometimes with distrust. And so when people found their way from outside the region traveling through the mountains, I think that there was a curiosity that took on this dual nature with the way that Appalachian people were written about. At the turn of the last century, for example, it tended to be both this romanticizing perspective of, you know, Appalachian people were called our contemporary ancestors. So this idea that they're stuck in the past and that there's a romantic way to see that that way of living, because we tend to romanticize the past. But at the same time, there is something that there's this demonizing way of looking at people who are from the mountains, who are living in more isolation. And I think that the demonizing has to do with capitalism, has to do with the desire to have a place that you can take natural resources. So the extractive industries, of coal and timber, the ways that that the use of the land has been justified has to do with seeing the people living there as less than and other. And that happens both in sort of seeing them as quaint and of another time, but also as seeing them as, you know, there's something wrong with people who are living here, and so it's okay to flood their land, to take their trees, to blow up their mountains.
What do you hope your readers will take away from the book?
I think ultimately I hope that people will look again at Appalachia and realize that the stereotypes that they see in these films are stereotypes, that they can't understand what it means to be in Appalachia by watching one movie or one set of movies.
That was Meredith McCarroll, author of Unwhite: Appalachia Race and Film. Her book is available through the University of Georgia Press. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.